I don't have anything specifically in mind. I just feel like podcasts I've listened to do usually have some sort of, this is blank and here's what we do. And I think that the more interesting you can make it, the better. But I don't feel like Convert, Revert, Cradle, Catholic Walk Into a Room is quite doing it. I didn't even really feel like it when we said theologian, philosopher, and campus minister. So
and go 10,000 places. You don't.
I like that. I like and go 10,000 places. Like I like that, especially if you've listened to the kind of contextualizing episode of where our name comes from.
But we go deep, right? There's people who do culture stuff, mm-hmm. and there's people who won't talk about Bonaventure's ontological argument right. when right. they engage the culture. And there's people who do the other. They'll go deep, but there's very little engagement right. of the right. times. And there's people who just go deep in the culture, like Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is just, it's just nutso. So we're not that.
No, we are not.
Yeah, but a tagline that somehow makes clear we're not going to shy away from a hard conversation right. with lots of logical nuance.
Right.
But we don't stay in an ivory tower.
Yeah, yeah. That's hard to get into a tagline.
Bring the ivory tower to the...
No, that sounds like we're Marxist yeah, saviors.
Straight from the underground, broadcasting in the basement of a rectory, we're bringing the message to the people.
This is good stuff. We should somehow get this into the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, thank you, listeners, for joining us. This is 10,000 places where a blank, 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 blank. That is the tagline that we are hoping to have someday. But
those aren't censoring blanks. Those we don't know what we're saying yet. Blanks.
No, I'm
well,
saying
could be censoring.
10,000 places where a convert, a revert, and a Cradle Catholic go into a room, and then where do they go from there? I'd say it.
10,000 places?
At least 10,000 places. My name is Alex Giltner.
I'm Justin Aquila.
I am Lewis Pearson.
And we here on this podcast like to talk about all things Catholicism, culture, the present epoch that we are in, and how to bring forth the riches of the tradition to speak to that. We're kind of a Resource Ma sort of group, a little bit of Nouvelle Théologie going on in here. If you don't know what those words are, you don't need to, because I'm just being pedantic.
I don't know what that word means.
Yeah, I know, right? You can't even be pedantic without being pedantic.
I thought you were enriching, right? You give people words they don't know.
Yes. Yeah. See, that's right, right? Yeah. I like to tell my students, why on earth would you want me to dumb this down for you? At what point did education stop being a call for you to rise higher, right? I don't think you're dumb.
Yeah.
I think that you could learn some things, and I want to call you into that experience. Now, that's not to say you can't find points of contact that make sense. You can't just speak gibberish to people.
Sure.
But there is this sense in which education should be laid out for me on a platter so that I can just eat it instead of I need to like meditate. I need to think this through. I need to actually put forth the work in my own soul, in my own mind to absorb this deep reality that's come out of what thousands of years of human conversation.
Yeah. I think one word to describe what you're talking about here is discipline.
Ah, yeah. I like that word.
Yeah. Well, it came to mind because I know we were going to be talking about discipleship.
Discipulus.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the intellectual life as well, I think there's clearly there are virtues associated with this. And when I'm tempted to forget that there are virtues associated with this, sometimes I look at what happens, right? So like there's this realization that these people who are well-trained theologians and philosophers, when they step out into social media, you almost see this pivot away from the intellectual virtues to the intellectual vices.
Oh, yeah.
I've had this encounter like this person, former teachers, things like that, who I know and respect for their cutting intellects, for their prudential judgments, suddenly are spouting whatever the algorithms are telling them to spout.
I've got a few names coming to mind that I won't name.
Yeah.
I won't name names.
So the long and short of it, I think social media militates against intellectual virtues.
Well, and I guess listeners, you should probably know in this highfalutin podcast milieu that we're entering into, you have two, like a quasi Luddite and a Luddite in this room. So Justin's the only one who's actually on social media. I gave up social media years ago and have never questioned that decision. And then, do you know what social media is, Lewis?
I gave it up in 2005.
Oh, okay. So back when it was MySpace.
And Facebook had just started.
Right. So yeah.
I know my spiritual weaknesses.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But it does seem like, to reinforce your point, that social media certainly doesn't call forth the more charitable dialogical encounters.
Yeah. I think not just, I mean, certainly does not call forth the charitable. I remember when there's this optimism of Catholics in the around 2004, 2005, and they were starting blogs, and there was the Catholic blogosphere. The Vatican Social Communications Office held a summit of Catholic bloggers from around the world.
Only
right?
The Vatican.
Yeah. And it was this hope of, like, you know, Benedict put it one way in the World Communications Day message of, like, you know, launching out into the digital seas, like the missionaries of old, right? And now it's just become a place for Catholics to expose all their internal strife and drama.
Oh, sure.
I'm not saying there's no evangelization. I think there are people actually probably doing evangelization and doing it well. But to enter into the world of social media and not only retain your soul, but also those intellectual virtues, to think well, to think critically and truly, you have to be very aware of what you're, and intentional about what you're embarking on.
Are you saying it's, because I was trying to think in terms of discipline and discipleship, it's more difficult to do there, or there are specific disciplines that help to fight against this? Or
yeah, I've been thinking through that a little bit. So I treat social media in some ways as a game. It's a little intellectual exercise for me.
That's weird.
Yeah, I know.
No, you're weird.
I know. But part of me is trying to outfox the algorithms. So I've realized, for example,
at the algorithms and say, game on.
So this came from a place of, for like in grad school, ironically enough, when I went for my master's, I got deeply sucked into debates on Facebook.
Oh, sure.
And I was one of the uncharitable people waging wars in comm boxes. And what I realized is certain things coming through my Facebook, I'm older, I'm the Facebook generation, so I'm not quite off Facebook. I don't do Instagram. I don't do TikTok, the highly addictive ones. But Facebook, I realized if I block certain people, like I really had to pick like six people strategically from my newsfeed in Facebook, right? So who are popping up and their posts regularly. And I picked the people who pissed me off the most. Mm. Their posts consistently pissed me off. And suddenly the newsfeed became less addictive. Because I was realizing it was drawing on my anger at what I perceived as the stupidity of these Pearson's posts. What it did is it got me to post in the comment section.
So it's just watching your activity, and it notes high activity on these things.
Right. And it seems to be that you're sucked in to the controversy. Mm-hmm. And it figured out
controversy
pretty quickly.
Controversy creates clicks.
Yes. Who was agitating me?
Yeah.
And I'm sure Facebook has data down to that kind political affiliations, religious affiliations, and things like that. So by blocking six people from my newsfeed, I use Facebook less.
Sure. It makes sense. I certainly felt what you're talking about when I was on social media, and I never got on the other ones. I was only on Facebook. But I remember, like, once you comment, then you're waiting to find out when are they going to respond?
Yep.
When are they going to respond?
Yep.
And you're already formulating response to that.
Yep.
And it's not about learning from each other. It's not about. And so, like, if I could kind of pivot back to discipleship here, I'm sure there are virtues that will make you better at doing social media. But I think part of the problem is that discipleship, similar to what we were saying about evangelism, is a relational reality.
Yeah.
And social media tempts us to reduce people to their utterances, reduce people to their posts.
Or their avatars.
Or their avatars.
Interesting.
And not really engage them as persons. And there is a discipline to being relational. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows that anybody who says that, you know, relationships shouldn't have rules is ridiculous and probably has terrible relationships. Because they need that. They need discipline.
Let me translate that into modern pop psycho speak.
Okay.
Not pop psych, not psycho. That's a different thing. it would be to define the boundaries of your relationship.
Yeah. I think so. But also, I think also defining expectations.
Yeah.
This makes me think of, actually, a student asked this question today. He said, I've got a friend who thinks these things that are immoral are wrong, and he thinks they're not, and I can't change his mind. And we got into a conversation about the typical cliche response that many people have. Well, you can't change people's minds and people are set. I change my mind all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is what it means for me to have been a convert back to the faith, all kinds of things. But we had to look at the specifics. And it sounded like he had a friend. This was an ongoing thing. And so the witness that we would give is one through the relationship, right? Through the joy that you see in my life, through the care that I have for you, you, the person who also knows that I think that you're wrong. And so my correction comes because I love you and I want you to be better, not because I'm trying to beat you. And he was saying, well, how do you know when you're supposed to correct and when you're not supposed to correct? What occurred to me was that the commission, when Jesus sends them out two by two, right? He says, go out and give the word of peace. And if the household rejects it, you take it back and you dust your sandals off in condemnation and just walk out. And so it's interesting. We have a call to spread the gospel. And we also have situations like this where Jesus says, yeah, walk away. It seems like situations where it's a one-off, where I'm just going to hear the person's utterance, it's closer to a social media interaction. It's a node that I'm replying to, not a person. Like you said, you're reducing the person to an utterance. And so maybe I realize this isn't the time for saying something because I'm going to fall into this pit where I'm just fighting the bumper sticker and not actually engaging a person, because this isn't a circumstance in which engagement's actually a possible thing. There's no relationship in the first place.
Right.
So Angela, so my wife, none of us are on social media now, but when she was the last holdout, and I mean, there's two of us, the kids aren't, none of them are on social media. And she was noticing there's one or two friends that she had to respond to with regard to certain, you know, moral teachings or controversies that had a moral component to them. And she was spending more and more time thinking about them and asking me, how do I write things back? And there was this discernment that we had to do, that how much of our time is supposed to be spent with our friends who need the correction, and how much is meant for the free riders who are listening to the conversation. Because I'd say, look, you know how this person is. You've already given these explanations. You have other things to do, and they'll be more edifying for you and everyone involved. But then she'd get emails from friends saying, I'm so glad you're posting these things because we can't explain it ourselves, and you're doing a good job because she's a trained philosopher.
Yes.
And so she started wondering, well, all my friends keep saying, keep it up. But you, my husband, are saying, the kids need you. And it's trying to discern this thing. We can do good in all these different places, but it may be just the different gifts that people are given. Some are supposed to be this missionary out to the stranger and to the eavesdropper and to the free rider. But I wonder if a lot of us aren't.
Yeah. I just read a book about discipleship, that particularly discipleship formation, that wasn't so much like mind-blowingly good in its writing and things like that.
Was it called A Christian Joy and Maturity?
Yes.
Yeah.
What was stunning about this is this,
Something Gordon.
Daniel Keating, who's teaches at Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit, and Gordy Damaris.
Gordy Damaris.
Is the founder or co-founder of St. Paul Outreach. What I was fascinated by the context in which they were talking about discipleship. It was something that I believe when I form disciples is important, but was lacking in my articulation, which is you have to form disciples in community. It's the way Jesus did it. Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely. So like you can't form disciples on social media.
Right. And that was the naivety of the early 2000s that we thought not only we could preach the gospel, we could actually form people. Yeah.
Because you can't have a relationship that exists solely on social media. That's the reason, right?
You just can't. Yeah. And then also like discipleship is more than the assimilation of information. Mm-hmm. It's the absorption of the person. So if we want to get like biblical for a second, the word in Latin, of course, is disco, discere, which just means I learn, to learn. A disciple is a learner. Mm-hmm. In Greek, it's...
Just thinking of discos. I'm sorry.
Yeah, of course you are. Of course you are. In Greek, it's mathetes, which I think is connected to where we get the word mathematics.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea, though, that formulates the biblical model of discipleship, and I think this is like it's rooted in the Second Temple Judaism culture. You know, you got to be careful about historical, like mischronological appropriation, but it moves itself into the rabbinic period, which is somewhat contemporary and really more post New Testament. But the idea of discipleship in this, like in the biblical world of the Gospels, is that one does not want to just learn what the rabbi knows. If you wanted to do that, you could just listen to lectures and sermons and stuff. But rather, one wants to become like their rabbi. Hmm. And this is why Jesus wasn't the only person to have disciples that left their homes to follow their rabbi around, because you want to see your rabbi eat. You want to see him sleep. I mean, it sounds kind of creepy from our perspective, but this is the idea. It's like you want to see him interacting every day in the market. You don't want to just hear the teaching. Mm-hmm. You want to actually become like the person that you're discipling under. And so you're there to learn a person.
Yeah.
And you're learning that person in a community of other people who are learning that person. So when we hear disciple or mathetes or whatever, and we just think pupil or learner, we're liable to make a mistake, I think, in thinking that this is purely the communication or transfer of information, when it's actually formation to be a kind of person. And then you think about like what Jesus is doing, because, you know, we read the Gospels in light of Acts and Pentecost. Yeah. Jesus is preparing them to be apostles, you know, the people who go forth and proclaim the message that Jesus is Lord, and to make disciples of all nations, right? Baptizing in the name of the Father and Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey all that I have commanded you. Matthew 28, Great Commission. So the call of even evangelism is a call to make disciples. Disciples of whom? Well, disciples of Jesus, but not just so we can learn some propositional truths about Catholics or some really good distinctions about substance and accidents, or, you know, learn slogans about the gospel that we can quote at people or whatever, but to actually learn to become like Jesus, who is continually presented to us in the Eucharist, in the sacraments of the church, and in the community of the church, the communion. You know, I was just reading Sacrosanctum Concilium, and how the liturgy is this communal event that forms the faithful into the church.
Right.
Right. And, you know, if you take, again, bringing those race or small people in, you take like the understanding of the church as an eschatological reality that persists in the present. Right.
So the promise of future glory, which is present in,
right.
In the church and this moment on.
So we both are the church and are becoming the church, right? And this is that very Johannine language of already, not yet. Because history is a theological concept. And history from a Christian perspective as a theological concept includes not just past, but also present and future. Because Christ is the key that unlocks history and gives it meaning in his incarnation. And so that incarnation that presents itself anew within the church every generation, every single day, is the context of discipleship itself. So what you have in the biblical model is you've got, first of all, they're kind of, Jesus is doing things like his society does things. You know, he's discipling. But he's setting forth a model, and you can really see this worked out in the Upper Room Discourse of John 14 through 17, mm-hmm. where he talks about the advocate is coming, right? This Parakletos is going to come and continue my discipling of you and disciple the community. And so church becomes a greater reality that encompasses, yes, all these things, but also then my individual life as I seek to follow Jesus. There was a rabbinic saying, I don't know if it was present in the Second Temple Judaism. The idea was you would be covered in the dust of your rabbi. Again, this may not have been contemporary with Jesus' own time. It's a rabbinic saying, which is a little bit later. But I think that the principle is actually right, that you're so close to your rabbi.
As he's walking around.
Right, that the dust plumes that are coming. Right, yeah. They're getting on you. And again, there are some biblical scholars who would, you know, laugh me out of court for even bringing up that saying. But I do think it actually does really get at, I mean, what else do you do with a model of discipleship that includes people leaving their families, leaving their jobs, leaving their homes to live, especially Jesus, who's an itinerant rabbi. He's walking around, going to these different villages, preaching the gospel, sending them out and then bringing them back. This is the model that we become like Jesus, not just know the things he knows, not just receive the salvation and the gifts that he gives us, but to actually be conformed to Christ.
Yeah. So I would like to think through something with you all. Like, I haven't shared this with you before, so we're thinking on our feet here.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. And this just might be new to me, right? I might throw this out and you're like, oh, we've known this. But I was thinking about, okay, so what the commitment of the Old Testament is to follow the law as revealed in the Torah and specifically in the Ten Commandments. But Jesus, who certainly teaches or gives new laws, seems to also be suggesting that as he fulfills, he's the only one capable of fulfilling the law, right? That he now is the new law.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what does it mean to follow the new law in the Christian era and the age of the Spirit? It's to follow Jesus.
Oh, yeah. This is the Sermon on the Mount, right? You've heard that it was written. You've heard that it was said. But I tell you.
Yeah.
Right? And he quotes Old Testament passages from the Torah in those moments. And sometimes he adds what were probably like oral traditions. Because, you know, the Second Temple Judaism and still I think in later and even to the Middle Ages, there's this notion of the written Torah and the oral Torah. Mm-hmm. Some of this is taken down in like the Talmudic writings and the Mishnah and such. But the idea that's being presented, I think, by Matthew is that, first of all, he's a new Moses. Yes. He goes unto a mountain.
Right, right.
And he sets down, right? And he starts proclaiming these teachings. And when you look at the Gospel of Matthew is a work of literary genius. And there's five discourses that are all like preempted and then flow into the next one. And this is the first one. And it comes right upon the preaching of the gospel. He begins to preach the gospel. He's tempted in the desert.
Yep.
Then he goes, he gathers his disciples, and he gives a new law, like the old Moses who came down from the mountain and gave the old one. He gives the new one. And it's filled with all these like really Lewis trilemma type like crazy statements that only a person who's a Lord lunatic or liar, you know, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall never pass away. People are going to try to get in heaven by saying they know me, and I'm going to say, no, I don't know you. Be gone. You know, if you want to live your life right, build them on my words, because that's like building on a solid foundation. Unlike people who don't follow my words, that's building on sand.
Yeah.
And so he gives this like almost manifesto of the new law, which is his own person.
Yes.
Which is why he says, because you get the sense of when he says, like, they come to me and they say, didn't we proclaim the Christ and do miracles and cast out demons in your name? And he says, I never knew you. The key to this law is not the following of perfect promulgations, but it's the recognition of Jesus' authority as Yahweh come down from heaven. You've heard that it was written, love your neighbor. But I tell you, love your enemy.
Yeah, and I think there's even, I'm forgetting where exactly in the Gospels, but Jesus says, I've gone before you, right? I think it's in John.
Yeah, that's John.
Yeah.
Because John really sets up this beautiful notion that Jesus proceeds from the Father as word within the Trinity. Then he is sent by the Father as mission to earth. And then he has that great line, which just blows my mind because it connects the Trinity to the divine mission of the Son to us. As the Father has sent me, so I send you, and then I'm going to prepare a place for you.
Right. And there's a similar thing, and I'll get back to my original point, but it's the same word. It's like he comes from the bosom of the Father. It says it early in John's gospel. And then you see the beloved disciple resting in the bosom of Jesus at the Last Supper. Right?
Yeah.
And part of the going before is like the reality that Jesus on the cross, or at least in his passion and death, is living the Beatitudes.
Oh, yeah.
So no long, there's this pivot, which seems to suggest to me that there is no other way of being Christian other than being a follower, a disciple of Jesus.
Absolutely. And I love the way you really put it in the terms of the Trinity. I have to read, this very simple, this is Bonaventure commenting on the sacrament of confirmation, which is the sending of forth of us to preach the gospel. And he says that confirmation, which is, it strengthens a person as a soldier of Christ prepared to confess his name publicly and courageously. This should be understood as follows. As our restoring principle, the incarnate word was eternally conceived in the bosom of the Father and temporarily appeared to man in his sensible flesh. Appeared to man in his sensible flesh. He likewise restores none but the one who conceives him in his heart by believing and who brings forth by fitting confession of faith him in whom he believes. So the mission, even in Bonaventure, this is carried through in Catholic theology. The mission of the church is the mission of the Father's generation of the Son, and then our generation of the Son, so to speak, of bringing him forth into our hearts and then sending him forth as the message to be proclaimed.
This is making me think, one, of Kierkegaard. I don't know if I'll get to that. His spheres of existence, there's the religious that the ethical doesn't understand. The ethical is run by laws.
So it's the aesthetic, the ethical, and the religious?
Yeah, in that order. The aesthetic is the lowest.
Right. But
the ethical life is the one that sees meaning and structure come from following rules. But the religious life realizes that the rules are actually secondary to the person from whom the rules flow.
Totally see him responding to Kant in that.
Yeah. Well, but the first thing that occurred to me was I'm sensing little nuggets to help correct. It's not exactly sola scriptura readings, but ways that we fall away from understanding what the Christian life looks like. So if someone thinks, well, I mean, this is what heresy is to pick and choose, right? To pick out this little thing. Well, all we need is this. And if you tell me some extra thing, that's added on accretions. So it's just about preaching the gospel. But Jesus says to, you know, preach the gospel and baptize in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So baptism is part of it. And so someone who leaves baptism out isn't following Jesus' word. But this other thing that is obviously there, it's always been there, but I never thought about it until you put it that way. Go forth and make disciples.
That's the command.
That phrase, in my thinking, and maybe not for everyone else, but most people who I see picking and choosing the things that Jesus has to do, very few people ever pick that phrase.
They don't. And what's funny is the construction in Matthew, and I'm sorry we're getting so biblical, and so I'm like pulling up all the air of the conversation. I apologize. Sorry, listener. You probably would rather hear from Lewis or Justin. But this is 10,000 places.
I was waiting for that.
And
if you're, who you signed up for, listener.
Yeah. So if you're just joining us, this is 10,000 places. We're talking about discipleship generally, but also the biblical model of discipleship and how it connects to a theology of discipleship, which is connecting our sending forth and mission to Christ's own generation from the bosom of the Father, and then his mission to earth, is like John puts it. And so in the actual commission, the Great Commission of Matthew 28, the command, the imperative is go and make disciples, baptizing them. So participle, right? Baptizing them in the name of the Father and Son and the Holy Spirit and teaching them, participle, to obey all that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always to the end of the age. So baptizing and teaching are the method by which one does the command, which is to make disciples. And that's the command.
Proclamation.
The command is to go and make disciples.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This is what you're getting as words matter. And the full context matters, because if you take that phrase in Matthew as our mission statement, we go, that's missionary. Mm-hmm. We baptize, we bring into the sacramental life, the very life of the Trinity. We go baptize all nations, so it's a universal decree, and make disciples.
And teach.
Teach and obey all you command.
All of that is making disciples.
Right.
Right? That is the going and making disciples, is the bringing them into the sacramental life and then the teaching them the truth.
Yeah.
Oh, something just occurred to me. The difference between mystagogian and didactic Christian education, right?
Give it to us.
So didactic, it's straightforward. This is who Jesus is. Look at Jesus. Jesus loves me, for the Bible tells me so. So I know who Jesus is. Mystagogy, a drawing into a mystery, a place where you're pulled into the bosom of God the Father, where something is happening to you. I wonder if there's many Catholics, this is painting with broad brushstrokes, but many Catholics, Justin, you mentioned this before, see the faith as nothing other than an ethical worldview, a teaching. Mm-hmm. And so few people have an awareness of Jesus being the center, or supposed to be. And I wonder if we're making people disciples and they don't know who they're being conformed to. Yes. So they don't even recognize the image that they're imaging.
Yep. So I'm curious, maybe we can think about this practically and we can maybe have a two-pronged approach. Mm. One is I suspect we've all made adult disciples who are not related to us. And by make, we've participated in their formation.
So sure, God is the only, I mean,
right,
yeah.
Right, we've cooperated with God's grace.
Right,
to help
Apollo planted the seed, I watered it, but God makes it grow.
But we're also all fathers, and so that's another form discipleship formation takes.
Having children is the evangelism. Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, what your, maybe your thoughts on, like, are there patterns that you see that have to be consistent both in the way we form our children as disciples and what the way we form our students or our friends or our fellow parishioners? Or maybe there's differences, or maybe the differences are just in...
No, I have to think about that. That's a good question.
I mean, certainly the modeling aspect, which is, I think, important. I mean, I was just talking to a friend and she was like, well, do you never get like worried that like you're teaching these people and like, so you're actively forming them. And so doesn't that make you worried about what you're teaching them? And I said, no, I mean, I teach what the church teaches. So I it's not because I'm so great. No, what terrifies me is living that out in front of them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if I don't live up to that teaching, that discredits the word.
Creates a scandal.
Mm-hmm. Right. And not that, you know, I'm worried about like something really scandalous, right, but just like I'm supposed to be a disciple of Christ who is discipling others in Christ. Yeah. You know, as Paul says, imitate me. I urge you to imitate me as I imitate Christ, which is not to say I'm online like as Apostle Paul, but the terrifying thing to me is not living forth that Jesus has made me new, not just that Jesus has taught me really cool things through the church and the scriptures and such, but that I actually am the man that, you know, and we all fall short of this.
That I'm the new man that, that was that I've been given in baptism.
Yeah.
Well, this is how hard-headed I am. This is the connection I just made thinking about your question. Many of my Protestant friends say that they've stopped thinking that Catholics are these horrible heretics who are going to hell.
Oh, good.
Because of my witness. And it made me really angry. Yeah. Because these friends I have in mind that I'm talking about right now are philosophers. We met in grad school, and I think none of my arguments from logic, tradition, history, scripture, my arguments have meant nothing to you, clearly, because they're smart. They can figure out ways out. They find these loopholes. They find these alternate interpretations. I think they fail, and I tell them this. And so what angered me was, we're philosophers, and my arguments are doing nothing. It's my life witness that's doing the work.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's this, maybe it's this superficial, you know, this pride that why isn't the thing that I'm doing in terms of my manipulating you working? Instead, it's this way I'm living that's getting through to you. And the thing that connected for me was it's hard to get out of this, I do a thing and I see a result mentality. But in my kids, I know that's not how it works, right? I hear the tone of voice. I hear using anger to correct a sibling. And all of a sudden I realize, you probably got that from me. I'm correcting you with my habits and my anger instead of something else. Mm. And so I see it. It's not just like I do this thing and you get it, like a dog who's learned a trick. That you're watching how I do things unwittingly and just copying me naturally. Yeah. The question that you asked makes me think, I need to realize that's what's happening in my quote-unquote day job as well.
That is discipling.
Yeah. And it's that discipling. That is discipling in community.
Yes.
That's why community... So I'm getting excited because it's like, what does Jesus do? Come live with me.
Yeah, come and see.
That's what he's saying.
Right.
Come and see. Come live with me. I'm going to walk around Galilee for the next couple of years. And some people leave him. We know that, right? Some people try him out and he's not their cup of tea. God have mercy on them, right? Like, but what are the communities that we're being invited into as disciples? One of them is our families, right? And I think the family can't be separate. The family is the model. It is the analogous model for all formation because it is a life lived in community. I've been thinking about this a little bit more. Like, I actually think Christian communities need voluntary, I want to emphasize that, and mutually agreed upon standards that are agreed upon in the community.
What does that mean?
Another way to put that would be like mutual commitments to each
like
other.
Like a religula?
Yeah. So... Yeah,
a
way of life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So analogously, lay people do not live as communities who take vows
according to
each other.
Rule.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm only speaking as an analogy, not literal. I don't think lay communities of lay people.
I don't know. I'm going to write a rule for my family. I'm going to see what Mary Beth thinks of it.
I think that is actually a place where the rule would apply because you vowed yourselves to each other. Sure. The vow, in a sense, is the rule. But
your neighbors, your parish community, something.
Yeah, you have to have mutual obligations to each other.
That's what I was saying earlier. Like, relationships have rules.
Yes.
So if I can, because we've gone in a billion different 10,000.
10,000.
If you're just joining us, listeners, this is 10,000 places where Catholicism. Yeah. Yes. I'm a theologian that can't say it's Catholicism. Catholicism and culture meet.
Let's start talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, right? Why not?
Just throw it in there.
Hey, Yoda disciples
Ooh.
Luke.
Yeah.
But so to kind of bring some of these thoughts back together, because we've been a lot of different places, but I think that, like, as a fundamental point that I think we can continue to explore in later episodes as well, is that discipleship is a relationship of formation mm-hmm. where one learns to be like the master and to exhibit the master's qualities, not necessarily personality, but qualities and habits and viewpoints. Whereas many people have reduced discipleship to simply showing up for sacraments or rites or rituals or learning the doctrines super, super well. That's not what we're actually called to. And it's also not what we're called to go make.
Yeah.
Those
are downstream things.
Right. Right.
Yes. Downstream.
And it's in the commission, baptizing and teaching. Like, we are called in making disciples to draw people in as well as ourselves be drawn into the sacramental life and the life of the mind, the truth that Christianity teaches. But that discipleship is primarily a relationship of formation where as Christians, because discipleship happens all over the place, as Christians, we are attempting to become like Jesus.
Yeah. And we flow from his side. I use the phrase downstream as an intentional metaphor because these things flow out, right?
The blood and the water.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about, you know, there's one way I could think about my wife, the person from whom I get many different benefits of companionship and conversation and tax breaks or whatever, right? Right?
So romantic.
Yeah. Or I could think of her as the person whom I love and with this focus realize that certain things flow from who she is and the nature of our relationship, like companionship and so on.
Right.
And even though in both cases, I can identify certain, you might call them benefits or results. One of them, I put the cart before the horse. Like, they're supposed to be downstream that flow from the person in the relationship. They're not supposed to be the things that the relationship is about.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, I mean, I think that, you know, bringing it back to the family as model, like marriage, the sacrament is a vow to help each other become like Jesus so mm-hmm. that we can mm-hmm. enter into heaven.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, heaven is not at the end of the day meriting something in the sense that we've gained enough hit points
yep.
and now we're allowed. It's certainly not like having gone through the right motions. It's we've become so much like Jesus that we don't have any attachment to sin and we belong in heaven.
Yeah.
And that's what the marital vow is about. This is this, so we are discipling each other as we are disciples of Jesus. Then we model that for our children. And I think you're right that that is like the like almost like subsidiarity, although that's different. But this like this is the fundamental unit of discipleship from which flows all of these other ways that the church makes disciples.
Yep. Yeah, I think this is what the church means by the domestic church. I think it's what the church means by the parents or the primary catechists. I think replace catechists with the primary disciple makers.
Yeah, the formators.
Yeah. So the church comes alongside, right?
Right.
I mean, the hierarchical and ministerial priesthood comes alongside the priesthood of the believers in the home.
I like the way yeah. that you're being very careful not to say that the church is doing something as if what's happening in the home is not also the church.
Exactly.
That's really
that
good.
The church, yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Because that's key, right? Like, I've just been reading Sacrosanctum Concilium, and it's so clear that while there is this priestly magisterial role, the church is the faithful. And like Augustine says, I am a bishop toward you, but I am first a Christian with you.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that like to kind of draw out some main points, discipleship is a relationship. It can only be done in community. It's about
why it should not be done on social media.
It should not be done on social media. You cannot form people in a reality, nor can you be formed in a reality because, you know, like submit to each other out of, you know, mutual reverence for Christ. Like we are called to form each other because none of us have completed the journey. Right. That's why we look to the saints. Right. We look to the saints because they are models of the faith. We look to them because their merits produce opportunities for grace, but they are this vision of what we should look like. But the journey there is amongst each other. And what we're called to is not to know a certain kind of thing or to go through a certain kind of motion or eat a certain kind of food or, you know, what we're called to is to become like Jesus together. The church is an ever-present reality, the very bride of Christ.
Yeah. And I think maybe some practical applications here. I think of the Beatitudes and I think of penitential seasons like Lent. So in the Beatitudes, you know, Christ said, I come not to abolish, but to fulfill the law. So if the law says, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal, and so on, if I love, I'm not even going to be tempted to do that. Not only will I keep the law, not only will I not kill you or lie to you or steal from you, but I'll also go over and above that because of the love, right?
That is exactly what he carries out in the antitheses. That's what they're called, the but I say.
Yeah.
In the next verses. I mean, it's someone takes your cloak, give them your tunic as well.
Yeah.
Because if you love, then you, even for your enemies, want to. And of course, they're talking about it. It's something that could happen legally where you'd be forced to give your clothing as to pay a debt. Yeah. But also, you've heard, do not kill. I tell you, if you call your brother Raka, or, you know, empty head, moron, you have committed murder in your heart, you know, like adultery in your heart. Like the new law is both more, in a sense, to qualify these words, like in a sense, the law is more merciful and more rigorous.
Yeah. So notice there's still things we have to do. We still follow the commandments, but not because they're commandments.
No, because we're becoming a kind of person.
Yeah.
This is why I think Paul says the law is lacking, in that it points forth the sin. It is the pedagogue that shows us how lacking we are. But as he says, the law cannot bring righteousness because the law can't form us into being certain kinds of people. It can only keep us from doing certain things and make us do other things, which we can have any motivation for. But we're called to become like Jesus, who is the new covenant and the new law, that we become the kind of people who do the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The law indicts us, but it can't save us.
Right.
I mean, that's why we need Jesus.
Yeah. That's a very glib way to explain like how Paul views the law. Of course, it's complicated and we get biblical scholarship, but don't want to do that.
These kinds of considerations help us to avoid the very empty, all you need is love.
Oh, sure.
Right. But love means being a certain kind of way. And discipline makes that clear. The reason we rankle against it is because it's hard to be conformed to a new.
Yes.
A new shape, a new form, right? But like in Lent, I think, what does it mean to sacrifice, to fast, right?
Pain.
To give alms. It means
suffering.
Yeah, it doesn't mean to do these things and that's what makes me Catholic, right? It means if I realize there's dysfunction in my life and I've wronged you, I want to go out of my way to make it right, right? I want to become the kind of person who doesn't betray you anymore.
Right.
And put myself in a vulnerable position where you can tell me how to be so that I can fix this relationship that means everything to me. And so prayer and fasting and almsgiving are the things that help us to do that. They're not because you're Catholic. They're because this is the relationship and the relationship is going to entail certain kinds of disciplines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The disciple Absolutely. Follows the discipline.
Right.
And the disciple follows the discipline precisely within the community. He's disciplined by the community. Right.
Which is not always corrective. Like you're talking about, you know, it's not always
imitative even.
Right. Right. The discipline comes forth in all kinds of ways that are not necessarily corrective and certainly not punitive.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was blessed to have been formed not just by my family, but by a wider community. And I always pointed toward my best friend's dad growing up because there was something about him that was like, there's something about the way he lives the faith that I just want to imitate.
Yeah. I think that there is no more powerful evangelism or discipling than that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's the key. I want to be
attraction.
I want to be like that.
Yeah.
And maybe just to wrap this up, I think one of the objections I think I used to have it.
Objections.
Right. But I can almost hear a listener saying, well, how can I be a disciple maker, a disciple formator? I don't have my stuff together. I don't have my life together.
Oh, yeah.
And
sorry, guys, you got to be kicked out of the church.
Right, right. but there's a kind of like, okay.
We don't need no dead weight around here. Yeah.
I that means I can offload the work of making disciples to everyone else in the church, particularly the hierarchy, right?
Oh, so it's not really a benevolent.
That's maybe a consequence. Okay, it's sure. Not always, I don't want to infer from everybody's intentions, yeah, sure, but I think it's a mindset maybe. But I think this is where Paul's been helpful to me when he says, in, I think it's Corinthians, he says, I am what I am by the grace of God. Two things. When we lean into the fact that we're formed by community, and I don't have to do it all because, Alex, you're there to help make disciples, and Lewis, you're there to help disciples alongside of me. So there's a humility in realizing it's not all on my shoulders, yeah, and it's not all my witness, as imperfect as it may be. And the second is just that utter dependent, appalling dependence on the grace of God.
Absolutely. And Jesus didn't say, go make yourself perfect and then go make disciples. Like, we're called to make disciples and we got to meet people where we're at. Yeah. I mean, just as a reminder to all of us, like, if the rule is you have to be perfect before you can spread the gospel, and then we're totally screwed.
It imagines a world where my own repentance can't be a form of forming disciples.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he did say, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect, but he didn't make it a prereq.
But he also, you did it. So the word there from telos, it's a cognate of perfectus, which means to be complete.
Mm-hmm.
So
telos is the Greek word for end.
And like to fulfillment. So the idea is like, I mean, yes, this would include eventually being flawless, but the idea is not be flawless. The idea is be complete. And what's the example there? Well, God sends his rain upon the righteous and unrighteous alike. God treats his enemies and his neighbors with the same charity and love.
Yeah.
Be perfect like that.
Yeah.
Be complete.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, when I hear perfect, I hear complete. I don't hear flawless. Yeah, yeah. But
yeah, maybe I'm like responding to kind of parlance there.
Yeah, that is a view that people do have, I think.
But you're right. Yeah. Like, it's not a prereq.
Yeah.
It's the act of discipling has taught me more about being a disciple.
Oh, absolutely. Just like teaching has
taught me more about theology. Yeah.
This is interesting. I don't want to go as far as this, but a friend of mine, when I was sponsoring him coming to the church, said he loves all the saints. He had a hard time with Mary because he could sympathize with and be inspired by people with flaws and sin. And he couldn't be moved by Mary because he didn't know how to sympathize with that. I just remember that scene from The Life of Brian when Jesus says, you know, the one without sin cast the first stone. And
mother.
Yeah. So that's a digression.
Yeah.
Maybe it's one of the places we're going in. 10,000 places.
10,000 places. Hey, if you've been listening and enjoying this, we are grateful. We have some ways that you can reach out to the podcast, Justin.
They'll be in the show notes.
Okay. They'll be in the show notes. So good thing I set that up.
I always forget.
Yeah. When people, I hear the podcast and they say the show notes, I say, what is that?
Yeah.
Do you have a website? How do I find your show notes?
Yeah. So yeah. I think if you email us at
wherever you download your podcasts, we can be found.
Yeah. Wherever you download your podcast. That's right. That's what other podcasters say. We're like legit
we're
now.
We're famous.
Yeah. We're not. Also, I think you can email us at 10,000placespodcast@gmail.com, all spelled out. If you want to support the show or give us some topics that you'd like us to handle or deal with, we'd be happy to do that.
And we're not a call-in show yet.
We're not a call-in show, and maybe we'll never be.
Probably not.
Probably not. But, you know.
We can venture into the wild.
Right.
West, that is YouTube.
No. Oh, gosh. That's getting a little close to
social media. We get a camera in here. We can see the glory that is the rectory basement.
Oh, my gosh. This is amazing. I love it. All right. Well, thank you so much, listeners. We hope that you have learned alongside us a few things. I'm signing off as Alex Giltner.
If you're not signing off, who are you?
Okay.
You're Alex Giltner.
I'm Alex
regardless
Giltner.
Regardless of whether you're signing off.
Yeah.
And I'm Justin Aquila.
And I am Lewis Pearson.
And this has been 10,000 Places. See you next time.
This show is a production of the Spoke Street Media Podcast Network.
For more great podcasts, visit SpokeStreet.com.